Good. Okay, so I'm supposed to very briefly introduce Flatlanders Inn, which I don't think is that it needs much introduction here, considering that probably about a quarter of the people have lived there, a quarter of us here have either lived there or lead it in some way, shape, or form. But I should actually just start by introducing, well, you know, Jeff and Amanda Layton, and Brendan and Kelly Dvorak. They're the on-site leadership team, along with, I'm not on-site, but I'm on that leadership team, and have been there for a long period of time. And there's about, I don't even know, I should have done this, figured out this beforehand, but how many people are there right now? We don't, Julie, how many people? Oh, Julie's downstairs. There's about, I think about 20 people or so. Wow. Something like that. Anyhow, Flatlanders developed a number of years ago. It's been going, been in 6 years now where there's actually been people living in the building under the name of Flatlanders, and there was about a year or two before that, people living in the building before it was called Flatlanders, like Jeff, you were a part of that, of just extending hospitality to people who needed it. But even before then, there was this kind of understanding that being in this neighborhood and doing life and kingdom stuff together needed a local live-in expression. In other words, if you define poverty as just a lack of stuff, like if poverty is all about just that you don't have enough money or enough food, then to respond to poverty, you're going to give money or food, right? However you define poverty. But we began realizing, through a number of different circumstances and ways, that poverty is a lot more than that. Poverty is in one sense, a lack of community. In one sense. I know that doesn't apply everywhere, but that was certainly part of the deal here, a lack of positive community. And so how do you respond to that? Well, you begin by working at trying to create a place where there could be some positive community, right? And in this particular place, we needed to explore an expression of a 24/7 live-in positive community. Of course, we all try to have positive relationships and impact our neighbors around us. But so that was really sort of some of the genesis of the ideas. And Jeff's going to talk more about some of the theological ideas and the underpinnings of Flatlanders. And Brian actually is going to share a practical story about living here for the past number of years. But that's really what it was. It was a call to try to impact and influence our neighbors, but also ourselves. And recognizing that everybody needs positive community. And some people in certain life circumstances for certain periods in their lives, we really need the care and support of others on a pretty consistent basis, like more than just coming to church and seeing each other once a week, or maybe going to house group together and so you see each other twice a week or something like that, right? It's really important to have that if you're having, if you're in recovery of some kind of way or need some help or support in your life in another kind of way where it's the daily, it's on you daily. You're being pulled in a certain direction that you don't want to be pulled in daily, to be able to come out of your room and have other people there who are supportive and saying, hey, how's it going? How are you today? And working into your life rhythms of, so there's morning prayer, for example, that happens. And so that's a way to start, that's available anyways, to start your day that way, living in Flatlanders. And just doing it together, it makes a big difference, as opposed to doing it alone. That's really the basic sort of genesis of Flatlanders. Is that fair? Yeah. You weren't even around then, so I don't know why I'm asking you. Awesome. So, Brent, why don't you come up and share? And I think there's probably some questions. I don't know, we'll see. Like, we could probably have some questions afterwards, eh? See how it all goes. But as things progress this morning, I don't think I need to share anymore. Good. Brian James. Let's welcome him. Yay!
Okay, up until very late last night, I didn't think I was going to be able to be here. So I thought that Brendan was going to put on a wig and read this.
That's
so I'm just going to read this without the wig. That's okay. 4 years. Yeah, I've lived here for 4 years. And that is a long time. I moved in here 4 years ago thinking about all the people I was going to help. And that's pretty funny. No, it's not. Of course, deep down I knew that I was the one who needed help when I moved in here. I just had a son with someone that I didn't really know. And that was the result of a lifestyle that often accompanies playing music or playing rock music for a living. And though I was never comfortable with that lifestyle, and I often made efforts to break away from it, it was a losing battle. And it was a battle that I was fighting by myself. I struggled trying to sum up a life of experience that led me to being a loner. I was a pastor's kid, and I grew up in church, and I went to Christian school. And I eventually got fed up with it, and the church kind of got fed up with me. And I sort of gave up trying to form honest, accountable relationships that always seemed to end really badly. And then, as I felt the short-lived thrill that comes with even the lowest form of rock stardom, really low form, I realized after 4 years of sweating blood with this band that, and they're my best friends, the guys I was in a band with, but I really didn't fit in there. And so after parting ways amicably with those guys, I ended up just kind of drifting. And at this point I was battling depression and alcohol abuse and pot addiction and a series of unhealthy relationships. And I was struggling trying to make a living playing music. And my real addiction was just aloneness. Family has always been tough for me, and I didn't really fit it in school or church. And all my churchiness kind of made me stick out in the music scene I was in, so I didn't really fit in there. And I was generally just kind of regarded as pretty eccentric and reclusive and secretive, and I knew that's how people saw me. But that's just how it was. And then there was going to be a baby. So that changes things, usually. Obviously, I had to share some things about my life with a lot of people, like my family and the Anglican church that I was music directing at part-time. And that worked out well, and people were understanding and supportive, but I certainly didn't really share more than I absolutely had to. Instead of actually letting people in and sharing what I'd been going through and feeling for years, which is just not something that really occurred to me very often, I decided that I was going to search for a community. The kind of community that I read about in the Bible, and Shane Claiborne, and Tony Campolo. And the kind of community that made me think that maybe church wasn't a total waste of time. So I thought maybe I would ask people at the Winnipeg Center Vineyard if they knew about a community like that. And surprise, they were running one upstairs. Page 2. I thought that this kind of community would serve a number of purposes for me. It would be like killing lots of birds with one stone. So the first purpose would be I would somehow be transformed by osmosis into a healthy whole person. What? That's reasonable. The second would be the living arrangement would keep me out of trouble. The third purpose would be it would connect me to a church that I didn't just see as polite or pious and manipulative. So, you know, like the Winnipeg Center Vineyard. Yeah, you guys rock. It was an alternative to the way most of the world lived, which just as a rock musician and artsy dude, I was kind of into that to begin with. I would be able to intern there and help the poor, like it says in the Bible, so that's a bonus. And finally, I would look super socially conscientious and cool in a very counterculture rock star sort of way. Yeah, so that seemed like the place for me. So I moved into Flatlanders, and everything was going to be different. I seem to remember having said that before, but this time everything was going to be different. Except that I wasn't really ready to let anyone in, and I wasn't really ready to let anyone really know me. So that part was going to stay the same. And I was still going to try and make a living playing music, because that was really my only skill and my only real identity. So maybe not everything was going to be different. Flatlanders was very life-giving for me, though. I was loved and welcomed here, and people even liked me. And any life and love that I shared with the community was visited back on me tenfold, just like the Bible says about money. No, it doesn't say that about money. After a couple years, there was an art space that we're sitting in, and it was just like a dream come true, and I was able to have use of it, and I could help create a vision for it. And I really had no complaints about this place. It was exactly what I was looking for, and more. And I wasn't about to screw it up by letting anyone actually get to know me. So this, of course, didn't really end up helping me become a whole person very quickly. And the transformative power of Jesus in community doesn't actually work like work by osmosis like I hoped. The situation with my son quickly got out of control as his mother formed her own family, which I wasn't really a welcome part of. There's nothing like feeling like a bad father to lower your self-esteem to new depths you never thought possible. Depression really overtook me as I battled it inconsistently with meditation. Pitfalls of being a musician were still there. The added financial responsibility of being father was overwhelming me. And then one of the ladies on the corner broke into my car while I was out of town and used it for various purposes for a week. Stuff got really bad. Stuff got worse than it was before I moved in. And I still wasn't about to ask for help. Not the kind of help I needed. I would give vague answers about stuff I was struggling with. True-ish answers, but definitely not detailed answers. Wait a minute. Oh, this is supposed to be about Flatlanders, right? Not just about me. Because of my musician schedule and secrecy and general discomfort with social situations, except to just come in and make people laugh and then leave. It's hard to describe what Flatlanders was to me, except that they were very much there for me. And when it was clear that I was avoiding the community, leaders and members of the community would ask if they did anything wrong or if there's anything they could do. And that continually blew my mind. But the longer I struggled on my own private roller coaster, assuring the people who cared for me that I had stuff under control, the more I was sure that they were just going to give up on me, which was my biggest fear, being given up on. And I thought there was no surer way of being given up on than letting people get to know me. But then as 2 years turned to 4 years, I began to get the sneaking suspicion that these people were going to do everything in their power to not give up on me. They had been there in every way possible, and as my relationship with my son and his mother has improved, I know that I owe that all to my community, to Flatlanders, and that things would have gone from bad to even worse without Flatlanders. The community that I was too proud and alone to really enter into fully. So this year, when my roller coaster ride hit a real low, I was finally able to open up in a way that I hadn't opened up to anyone in over 10 years at least. And surprise, they didn't give up on me. There's no actual healing that you can get without being actually known. And you can't force someone to let you know them. Jesus stands at the door and knocks, and he doesn't break in. And that's what Flatlanders did for me for a long, long time. They just stood at the door and knocked, and knocked, and knocked, waiting eagerly and expectantly to be let in. I wrote a line in a song once that said, tough love isn't the same as the real thing. All it means is that it's tough to be loving. And that statement is definitely debatable. But what I mean is that tough love isn't necessary because it teaches anyone anything besides that people have limits. That's why tough love is necessary, is because people have limits. But you don't really learn anything from being given up on, except that you're just not worth knowing very much. But as I'm letting myself be known, my secret passions for philosophy and theology are surfacing, and I can discuss the role of church and community without feeling like a total hypocrite. And I do that with a certain John Howard Yoder fanatic who will rename Nameless. I learned that the church is called to just be something other, with quotation marks. Something other than the world's assumption that the only way to be happy and secure and to get anything done is through coercive power. And Flatlanders is really not about coercive power. It's not a structured program for reintegration into society. They're not like a regular sort of landlord. They're just trying to be a small representation of God's kingdom in the world. And that's what I've been looking for all this time, because I just never fit in. Something other. And I found it because they were looking to know me. And that has been my journey with Flatlanders. And I don't know how else it could have happened, except that they were just there for me knocking, waiting for me to let them in. And I'm very, very thankful. Questions?
Other than living in community, like sharing a kitchen and spending time together, so is there any kind of like group or communal like worship experience? You guys pray up there together to worship, you know, together, or is everyone just sort of?
There's morning prayer that is available for people, and worship hasn't necessarily been a part of that, but it's good. And then we all. You'll say that Christ is light prayer, which is actually why I put music to that song, because it was just a big part of my life there, and a helpful part of my life to say that prayer. So then, yeah, that was another thing. It was good to say that prayer in community with people. And I didn't often get up for that, but when I did, my day was a lot better. But I think that's it for communal worship structured things, right?
Yeah.
We say grace before meal. Yeah. Any other questions? Jeff, coming up.
I just wanted to say I love your comment. There's no healing without being known. Is that something you arrived at, or is that something you saw in the Bible somewhere, or kind of both?
I learned that through talking through some stuff with some people, and yeah, it was just the result of being known. I was like, oh, this is what it's like to like get better. It all of a sudden made sense in a way that really hadn't before.
So Ryan, what kind of advice would you give someone who struggles with the economic pressures of life and the spiritual versus the spiritual emotional pressures of what you talk about? Like how would you, if you were mentoring somebody, how would you help them walk through this whole putting it together, you know? There's a lot of young people who are in that kind of situation, maybe not as dramatic as yourself, but they struggle with the economics of life, let's put it that way. What would you say?
That is a good question. I would say that they need to be as honest as possible with someone about like what you're going through, and going through anything, like especially economics and stuff like that, is if you're just doing it on your own and you're trying to figure it out, and you're not, and there's no reason to not keep making the same mistakes, then you are. And if you're talking to someone about it, and then it's a lot harder to keep on making the same mistakes.
Well, you know, I'm just thinking about yourself. You know, you tried many things in life already. You know, with your job over there, the theater thing. What is that thing called? Get
there. The theater.
Wow, that celebrations.
Huh? Celebrations.
Oh yeah, celebrations.
Yeah, celebrations. Mm-hmm. And then of course your musical abilities and all that.
Mm-hmm.
So just keep trying, right? Just keep looking and keep working at it, right?
Yeah.
So I was, I went to St. Aidan's before where you went as well. I was there where, I'm not sure how forced or not,
you were there that Sunday.
I was there that Sunday, and I felt, when it started, I just felt really bad and really awkward for you, but, and I don't know how that experience plays into your life, whether that was a helpful, hurtful, good, bad experience, but at the end of the day, like when it finished, it was very powerful to me because, you know, the church deals with people who are hurt, and we always come, especially to services where it's all dressed up like that, and we try and be perfect, and it was really powerful for me to just say, no, we aren't perfect, and it was incredibly powerful for me, so I just wanted to say thank you, and it would probably was a horrible experience for you, but maybe it's just a glimmer of something.
It wasn't actually a horrible experience for me. I think when it's time to come clean about stuff, it's just, it's time and it's kind of cathartic, and I think it's been a saving grace, is that you just gotta not hide stuff. So it actually wasn't a bad experience for me. I was comfortable with it. And I think, yeah, a lot of people responded really well to that. Jeff? Oh, one more thing. I would like you all to buy tickets to the Bean Gallery Christmas show. It's really important.
Get into it. I titled it as cleverly as I could as a reflection on God, the Trinity, the Church, and Flatlanders. yeah, clever. I think that's really great what Brian shared, and I feel proud of him as a friend, and I've been graced by his vulnerability and that he's let me into his life. And I don't really think, oh, hang on a second, let me reread that. I really do think that, and I feel that with conviction. But I must follow that with somewhat of a harsh reminder that our friendship really only exists because of this place and the love of God. I'm not going to start talking to you about how our community suffers in Saturday morning cleanings has brought the unlikely together in flat numbers. I can't start zoomed in talking about the day-to-day without first stepping back and seeing where we are and how we got here. I'm not first a Flatlander and secondly a Christian. It's because I'm a Christian that I'm a Flatlander. The former informs the latter. My story is a part of your story, and your story, if you're a Jesus follower, covers the past 2,000 years through the bodies of real people who we call the church, which puts us in relationship with a whole bunch of other people who help form their own worshiping communities and ours as well, all based on the love of Jesus. Jesus came from a long line of people. Some are prostitutes, murderers, kings who functioned as murderers also. Actually, his family tree stretches right back to what we've been talking about in Deuteronomy, which is our father Jacob, the wandering Aramean. Our story takes us back further still, because Jacob comes from Isaac, and Isaac from Abraham. And if we look back even further still, we have the Tower of Babel, or Babel, Noah and his boat, and God's flood, Adam and Eve's kids, Cain and Abel. We have the fall, Adam and Eve themselves, and God creating creation. It might seem like we're almost there, at the beginning of our story, the creation narrative, the part where the text begins and the story unfolds from. I know if I suggest something else, I might be a heretic, but at least I'm a Flatlander. I'm not actually a heretic. I'm a Christian. And like a lot of Christians, I too believe in a God who is Trinity, who was and always will be before creation. For us Christians, the Trinity is our paradigm. We can't actually see God as a thing or as a being. As silly as it seems, God simply is, or as God put it, I am who I am. We can't look and see the actual Trinity. That's the mystery of our faith. And we say that the mystery put the whole universe in motion. This icon right here is a reproduction, actually, of an original painting done in 1425 by the Russian Andrew Rublev, and it's called The Hospitality of Abraham. And it's an account of our story. This icon comes to us from our past. It comes from Abraham, the grandfather of Jacob. It comes to us from the desert in the heat of the day. It comes to us from the eagerness and the anticipation of Abraham to entertain and be hospitable to anyone whose lives intersect with his. This is how Abraham met Yahweh, our God, the God who we have gathered today to worship, who is Trinity. And this is Genesis 18, 1-3. Brim, will read that for us.
The Lord appeared to Abraham by the oaks of Mamre, as he sat at the entrance of his tent in the heat of the day. He looked up and saw three men standing near him. When he saw them, he ran from the tent entrance to meet them and bowed down to the ground. He said, "My Lord, if I find favor with you, do not pass by your servant. Let a little water be brought and wash your feet and rest yourselves under the tree. Let me bring a little bread that you may refresh yourselves, and after that you may pass on, since you have come to your servant." So they said, "Do as you have said." And Abraham hastened into the tent to Sarah and said, "Make ready quickly 3 measures of choice flour, knead it, and make cakes." Abraham ran to the herd and took a calf, tender and good, and gave it to the servant, who hastened to prepare it. Then he took curds and milk and the half that he had prepared and set it before them, and he stood by them under the tree while they ate.
And then after that, the three proceeded to talk about the covenant God had made with Abraham and how it was going to be fulfilled despite their age and Sarah's barrenness. It is because of this we call Jacob our father. It is because God acted in providing a son, Isaac, to Sarah. It is through the power of God to act that our barren great-grandmother, Sarah, is our great-grandmother, and Abraham is our great-grandfather. And our great-grandparents saw the God who made the world, saw the fullness, or at least a representation, of the Trinity in the three distinct persons, and hung out with them. I must admit, I like icons. I like that they're real, and they're made of something. I like that the pictures put real faces on God and dead people who have informed me of who I am. I like that I can see them. I like that my 2.5-year-old son can, in the same way, say goodnight and wave the pictures of his Auntie Jenny and Uncle Jasel and the Trinity and call them by name, Father, Son, and Holy Spirit. I like that these pictures have stories associated with them, and those stories are mine, as I am theirs. I like that it's nearly effortless to look at them. I like that I can't just look and not see something more, and that my mind wanders as down a road toward a distant place, and nearly always lands in the lap, on the arm, or at the feet of God. I like this icon is a beautiful work of theological discourse and development, and pretty much tells the story I'm trying to tell. This icon tells a story well beyond what happened in the heat of that particular day. By looking at it as a window into the past and a reflection on the future, we can see the larger story, the pre-beginning, the passage of history, and from it, we can start to orient our lives in anticipation of what's to come. That's why I like the story we're a part of. It's because our story applies what the five senses over the years have come to know about God and forms language and thoughts around what in many respects is unnameable. It is God who simply is, who is the source of our story. And if we let it, our story informs our identity, our reality, and in turn, our rationale, which is how we think. I've already said I like icons, and I think, in part, it's because they're kind of a kind of theology, a formation of thoughts and actions, and are rooted in the labor of prayer, study, and meditation. Icons function as a pictorial synthesis of a lot of theological work, and I get to approach all that as a simple man who looks and gets drawn into the wonder of the story. And the more I look, the story seems to unfold. In no way am I disregarding study or suggesting we don't dig deeper and get into the thick of this stuff. It's just that sometimes, and in certain situations, it's good to use tools that have already been refined and sharpened. Did you know that the role of icons in our history, at least in part, has been to communicate truth to people who are illiterate? This icon, I'm gonna walk over here, has a whole bunch of things going on in it here. I'm not gonna get feedback, we'll find out. So we have the Father, we have the Son, we have the Holy Spirit. We have this table that they're gathered around, which is more or less provided by Abraham. We have, if you notice their hands, the Father here is, with his fingers, that's a blessing gesture, and he's directing it towards the Son. And the Son is holding his two fingers down like this, and he's talking about how he's coming as both fully God and fully man. And then the Spirit here, with his hand, is pointing down here to this rectangular thing, which is an opening of invitation. And that rectangle actually represents the world, which is welcomed into this. We have above the Father, we have the house there, which is the house of Abraham that God provided for him. Above the Son, Jesus, we have the tree, which is oaks that they're standing under, as well as it becomes the tree of life, and the tree that Jesus hung on. And then the Spirit, we have the mountain up there, and that's the heights of our prayer and meditation and all that sort of thing. The three of them also have these staves, and that's how they all have the same authority. And this cup here, which we have right here too, has the head of the calf that Abraham gave them, which became the lamb's head, and it's Jesus. And if you notice when you look at it, that's kind of the center of the entire thing. So there's quite a lot in that. There's more too. You should read about it if you feel inclined. It is important to remember at this time Genesis 3 and the broken relationships between God and people. But God, as God always does, acts in love, pursues, finds, and invites back into relationship. God always seems to make a way, which is our hope. And that's how Abraham and Sarah became a part of the work of God. He called them out of the wilderness to be separate and represent his way, that people would see and identify Abraham, like Brian mentioned, as other. Not standing on the side alone, but standing with God as God intended. The Gospels and the rest of the New Testament give an account of how God again decisively stepped into history, just like in the story of the three men who visited Abraham and through his power forged a way back. Or is that forward? I'm not really sure. And like I mentioned, the Son uses two fingers to point to the cup, reminding us that he came as both fully God and fully man. Jesus was a fleshy dude. He had meat on his bones and dirt under his fingernails. I find it difficult to imagine Jesus walking around Jerusalem and still being a part of the Trinity. I don't actually know how to explain that, except by suggesting that it must be true, because we have 2,000 years of people living their lives as though that's just the way it is. On top of that, the ascension shows Jesus, in a sense, taking humanity back to the Trinity. Again, confusing and hard to understand. I realize I've been talking a lot about God is love, and now I'm going to stop and talk specifically about Jesus and what he's calling us to. I want to be clear, I'm not promoting a sentimental Hallmark kind of love that warms our hearts. I will actually be quite upset if some of us leave today with a wishy-washy understanding of God's love. I don't want to provide a reflection that leaves us feeling comfortable. I want to leave us feeling uncomfortable and bothered. And I think I can say that because that's what Christians think. Or that's what we're supposed to think. Maybe. We are gathered in this room and downstairs to remember a particular type of good news. The broken body of Jesus and the Father, who we proclaim, rose him from the dead. It is the will of love to act and take broken humanity and make it right, to restore and bring to fulfillment the way it's supposed to be. Love is our victor, and the way of love is as confusing as its source, the communion within the Trinity. We ourselves participated in a type of communion this morning that reminds us of this. If you consumed the flesh and blood of our Messiah this morning, you said yes to this way of love, this way of living, this way of thinking. You said as Jesus did, I will act, and if you, Father, don't make something of this, I'll fall flat on my face. As Christians, we keep going and hope that God acts. That, for lack of better expression, is hard to swallow. But that's what we believe. That is where our hope rests, and that God is God who acts. As disciples, Jesus, that's how we're called to act. We're called to invite God to make sense of what we're doing, and as Jesus made a way for us to again participate in divine love, so too are we called to invite others into our lives, and into love. This church, the people sitting here right now, the immediate community of WCV, does this. We have people like Jocelyn and Sherwood and their boys who live as though their family is not their own. They offer their family to a child, or they have offered their child, no, their family to a child who needs love. We have Merv Scott, who coaches sports and shows love to youth. We have people like Cliff and Krista, or Andrew and Amy, sitting right there, who have offered themselves to this community as ambassadors of the kingdom of God. We do good stuff, and we hope we've put our hands to things God will show his love through. Flatlanders is birthed out of that type of love. The type of love that this church, that's you, have tried and do embody. It's this type of love I'm talking about. The love that goes outside of itself and loves others. This bread and juice helps remind us of how we're called to live. That's what we're trying to do. We're trying to become like Jesus in selfless love and complete welcome to all who are outside. That's what Flatlanders is intended to be. That's how we've chosen to live our lives. I'm not going to suggest that we've made it. I could have used all the time I just talked about, or I just used, and talk about the ways in which we haven't. My own personal failures and participation in going about it all wrong. But at our heart, at our core, that's where our conviction lies. We've come to see that we can't live separated, and that we are compelled to live with others, and that we're not possibly whole or complete without getting into step with the way things are supposed to be, in relationship with God and with those we're separated from, those who have also been marked by the fall and are in need of love. That is our calling, and that is yours. Right here, that part right there. That opening right there is the cup of sacrifice. It's our re-entry point. It's the way things are supposed to be according to love. Opening giving to the outsider. We get to choose who we bring with us. Thank you, all of you, for modeling what it means to follow a loving God. There's this theologian, John Howard Yoder, he has this great line, and it reads, "The church is called to be now what the world is called to be ultimately." I'm going to say that again. The church is called to be now what the world is called to be ultimately. And that's a reminder of what this icon displays. This holy communion of love that provides a way for us to participate in. We are called to be like that. I don't know if you guys are into repeat after me's, but we could say that to each other as a reminder, or I could just say it again. The church is called to be now what the world is called to be ultimately. With that, I'm going to close, and I hope that haunts you as you go about your week. Thank you. Questions, comments, concerns? Andy?
What's that guy's name?
John Howard Yoder.
Oh,
John, J O.
Y
O D E R. The hospitality of Abraham. The painting itself is actually really old and got updated a whole bunch of times. It's painted over, and there's been a whole bunch of historical work to scrape back and get back to the original painting. And so there's a whole myriad of different images and reproductions like this. It's more than you want to know. Yeah? No, but maybe. That book right there that I had is what's his name? Henry Nouwen. And it's called Behold the Beauty of the Lord, I think. And it's about praying with icons. Yeah.
Not two.
Not two, no. With. Yeah. That might be a good place. This is Kelly's book. You can borrow it from her if you want. And she says okay. Brent?
You said something a little bit uncomfortable, which I like. You said we need to live together. Correct?
Yeah, that's all.
What do you mean? Be a little, stop being so vague. What do you mean?
Well, there's expressions like flatlanders.
Yeah.
There's people like Merv.
Yeah.
There's people like Jocelyn and Sherwood. There's people like Andy and Becky. There's people like Mr. Social Worker guy there, Kevin Schellenberg, living in community with helping people. It's all different ways. Is that okay?
Yeah.
Okay. And I would say, like that picture, they were welcoming the stranger, right? Like Abraham's welcoming the three strangers. God is a stranger, so
yeah.
Wherever you are welcoming someone into your life, like isn't that community too?
Yep.
I think sometimes some of us need practical help to do that. Like we have to put ourselves into an environment where that's gonna happen because we wouldn't necessarily choose it.
Yeah.
I think that's why Jeff was a little bit vague in your question. But because some people just need it. Like some people need to live together. Some people need to live outwardly.
Like to add what Andy said, like Amanda and I, my wife, we've talked about moving out sometimes. Things get hard, whatever. Like, oh, let's go move out. Oh, yeah, maybe easier then. And it always comes back to you, no, we can't. At least not right now, because we need a structure like Flatlanders to hold us and to force us to go outside of ourselves. Because otherwise we don't.
Well, I think that's interesting, just last comment. It matches what Brian's saying, like the world is other, right? So, or we want to be other from the way our society works, and living together or creating community doesn't happen naturally. So that's kind of what I was getting at with my question.
Yep.
So we just want to end the service with some prayer time, which would be good. There's a lot of stuff happening with Flatlanders. No. There's good stuff and hard stuff, probably, a lot of both. So we want to pray for them as a community. And we also want to pray for Brian, because I think it's really awesome that you shared your story today. And so is it okay if we surround with you a little bit? Thanks. How about we have Brian stay right there, and then some people who live in Flatlanders, like Jeff and Andy, who's on the team, and Brandon, who's here, if you guys just want to go over here, and let's just surround them, and any words you have for them, or any prayers you have for them, and you can share, too, if there's any specific requests that we can pray for you. So, yeah, that sound good? Okay, so everyone has to move right now.